And welcome inside of this week's edition of What's Important Now. I'm Tom Sears. Thanks for being a part of our program as we continue our series, God Bless the USA. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so. What's Important Now, radio at gmail.com. And if you'd like to send something by mail, you can do so by writing What's Important Now, 8901 Good Hope Pike, Lost Creek, West Virginia, 26385. Listen to all of our archived messages at blogtalkradio.com/ What's Important Now. Let's get to it. We've been talking over the last couple weeks about the changes that are taking place in our nation. How there was a faction that started all the way back in the 1800s in an attempt to remove Christianity from government. And we learned over the last couple weeks that the early attempts failed. I told you about how the House Judiciary Committee said it is impossible to separate the United States government from Christianity because it's so embedded. They are intermingled or twined together. The Frenchman Alex de Tocqueville wrote Democracy in America, and he said back then, observing, that he had never seen faith such a part of everyday life as it was in America. But things have changed. We talked about how before 1962, our children in America prayed a very simple prayer. It said, Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon thee and beg for thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country. I took you on a journey in part two, last week's program, talking about the separation of church and state and how it's been misused and mishandled and misrepresented. Now it's just turned into a big fat lie. And the early attempts to do that were also thwarted. They failed. But eventually, they started gaining some traction. And in 1962, prayer was removed from the classroom. In 1963, the Bible, Ten Commandments, and all that kicked out. We have fallen far from a nation that started with the Bible as textbooks in our country. And I had quoted, I think, in part one, the Bible where it says they sow to the wind and they reap the whirlwind. And last week we started on a journey examining the effects of what has happened in our country as it pertains to those points, those four points in that prayer. And we're going to continue where we left off last week. If you were listening last week, we finished talking about what changes have happened in the family since 1962. And now let's take a look at schools. Since prayer was removed in 1962, let's take a look at what's happened. Well, the New England Primer, I don't know if you've heard of the New England Primer, but it was the first textbook actually ever printed in America. And I want to say, so people don't say, well, you said the Bible was. No. Thomas Jefferson, when he was overseeing a school district, said that the Bible was the first textbook, and he implemented that. But we're going to go back even before that, before the birthday of America, all the way back in 1690, when the New England Primer was introduced and was used in the public school system for the next 210 years. It was the textbook of our public schools. If you went to school in America, you learned to read from the New England Primer. It was a very simple book. It taught the alphabet. And after the alphabet, you learned how to attach sentences to those letters. And they gave you sentences to memorize. I want to just share with you the letters A, B, C, and D, and what was printed in the New England Primer and was used in our schools for 200 years and was memorized by our students for over 200 years. A. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. B. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. C. Come unto Christ, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and he will give you rest. And D. Do not the abominable thing which I hate, says the Lord. And it goes on and it goes on, letter after letter, sentence after sentence, verse after verse, really. Every phrase was a Bible verse. That's how the alphabet was taught in American schools for over 200 years using the New England Primer. Look at how far we've went backwards. The truth is without the blessing of God, with there being an increase of disobedience and a lack of respect, you have to understand that there also comes a lack of learning. I had a teacher share with me one time a cartoon that showed a picture of a student, a mother, and a teacher, and it said like 1950-something. I forget the date. And the mom was holding a paper that had an F on it. It belonged to little Johnny sitting there. And her finger was pointing at little Johnny like, you have to do better. And then it said, fast forward to today. And it was the same picture, just in a modern setting. Mom's holding a paper with an F. Little Johnny's still sitting there. Teacher sitting there, too. But the finger now is pointed to the teacher. So if you do not have the blessing of God, and again, we've told him to leave. And then if you add to that this increase of disobedience, which has its roots in students no longer learning how to respect people, that what is going to follow is a lack of learning. The SAT was initiated in 1941. It was placed on the same scale as it is used today. Prior to 1963, the SAT had never risen or dropped more than one year in a row. So basically, it stayed consistent, even-keeled, no dramatic or drastic changes. But after 1963, and if you're just listening to this program, I probably should stop and pause for a moment. 1962, we saw Engle versus Vitale that removed prayer from the classroom. In 1963, we saw the same court remove Bible reading from a classroom of public schools in America. And so what we're saying is this is what's happened since then, okay? So prior to 1963, the SAT, it had never risen or dropped. It stayed consistent. It was just pretty even-keeled. But once the Bible and prayer was removed, the SAT score dropped for 18 consecutive years and has continued to drop. We have seen an increase in Christian schools, private education. That way kids receive both education and Bible teaching. Think about this for a moment. Prior to 1962, there were only 1,000 Christian schools in America. By 1984, that number had reached 32,000. And today, nearly 8.5 million students attend private religious schools. And if you take a look at the SAT scores, compared public to private schools seem to have higher scores. 80 points on average, by the way. 80 points higher on an SAT score. That's average. 80 points higher. So what's the difference between the two? Well, it's not the core curriculum. They're the same. It's not the teachers, because we have great teachers who are working in the public school system. They're committed. They're great. Christian teachers in the public school system, I believe, are a light. The difference is not teachers. I believe the difference is that one school utilizes religious principles or morality. Again, let me just say morality. I'm a teacher. Let's just say morality. And with me, and you should know this, I do not force what I believe on anyone. Now, this is a radio program. You have the option to turn it off. In the classroom, kids have to listen to what you're saying, right? I guess they have to, but if you're standing in front of a classroom, see, I don't do this in the classroom. I do my job. I teach, right? I teach what I'm told to teach. I present what I'm told to present, and they don't have the option to turn me off. That's why it's inappropriate. But here it's appropriate because, well, you can turn the station if you'd like, but it doesn't change what I believe. It doesn't change my core values. My core values are we would be a better society if Christianity was allowed back into places like the public school system, if prayer was allowed back, if we were not so hush-hush about prayer and tiptoeing around the tulips tiptoeing around the issues. Tulips, I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, it's not teachers. The difference is that morality is being promoted in one setting. And again, our founding fathers believed the best teacher of morality was the Bible. I understand why. But let me say this. I think it's sad that private schools are removing, and it's not the private schools, it's people who choose to go there, but they're removing additional Christian teachers and students from public schools. And again, I understand why. I have some of the same values and thoughts. But I want to applaud all the Christian teachers out there who continue day after day to be an island of hope, who are trying their best to be role models and examples to our kids. The last part of that prayer was about our nation. What's happened in our nation since we said, God, you're not allowed? Well, violent crime that was stable before 1962, it's risen over 800%. And that's since the court's decision of 1962. Crime is actually rising faster than our population. Since 1962, America has become number one in the world in violent crime, divorce, voluntary abortion, illegal drug use, and in the Western world, teenage pregnancy and illiteracy. And we can call all we want for more jails, for more juvenile centers, but the reality is that this is a spiritual battle, and until we reach our youth and nation with Jesus Christ, until God is invited back, we're fighting a losing battle. Christianity stops crime. We'll say that again. Christianity stops crime. I'm going to say it again. Christianity stops crime. Why? Because it controls the heart. And crime comes out of the heart. If you don't purify the heart, you won't stop crime. And that's why Christian teachings and principles are so important to government. So what are we to do, ladies and gentlemen, as we wrap up this three-part series? Well, we need to remember that the separation of church and state, as it's been promoted, is a lie. It was not a teaching of our founding fathers. It was not a historical teaching in our country. It is not in the Constitution. It is not in the Bill of Rights. It is not in any law, but it has been used to change laws. We also have to understand that the current view of separation of church and state is not a biblical teaching. Separation of church and state says, okay, Christian, you can be the salt and you can be the light, but you can only do it within the walls of your church or in the confines of your own home, which is changing, by the way. But you can't do it in the world. It's not a biblical teaching. And my allegiance is and always will be to Jesus Christ. We need to believe those things. But we need to stand up for what we believe. Proverbs 18:1 says, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desires. He rages against all wise judgment. We cannot be the little church mouse that sits in the corner and says nothing. We cannot isolate ourselves. We have to take a stand. You know, it's absolutely hypocritical of us to get mad, to yell, to scream about government forcibly removing God in prayer from our schools, but then not allow him into our homes. So that's where we should start. We should start in our homes. You see, it's hypocritical to get upset and talk about the right to vote and who's in office and who's not in office. And for me personally, I do not like discussing politics with a person who doesn't vote. I think you exclude yourself from the conversation. And please take the time to be informed. Anyway, that was just a little nugget I threw in there. But it's hypocritical if we yell about who's in office, but then we neglect our right and our responsibility to vote. You say, well, my vote doesn't matter. Yeah, it does. Your vote does matter. We need to be willing to do something about what we believe. Maybe that's voting. Maybe that's voting for a candidate that holds your values. And I know that's becoming ever more challenging, isn't it? But it's important. And since it's becoming ever more challenging, maybe you're called to do something more than just vote. Yeah, your vote matters, but maybe you're being called to more. If you want to do something big for God, maybe it means you're going to be a pastor. Maybe it means you're going to be a missionary, but maybe it means that you're going to be a politician or a judge or a teacher. Taking the principle of God back into the areas of society and government where they have been removed. Maybe it's a lawyer. But bringing him back, bringing our godly heritage back. Remember I told you on last week's program that when in 1962 the court admitted that 97% of Americans believed that Christianity should remain a part of our everyday lives, including in government and all that, and only 3% opposed it? Are you tired of being robbed by the 3%? They've taken our heritage away. We need to take it back. I hear people all the time say, well, let's take up arms. Missing it. You're missing it. Wake up. You're not seeing it. I believe that the church, if we would focus on things like, you know, being kinder to people, loving people, and not sound like we hate everyone, I think that would be a really good first step. I said something in one of my sermons recently to the church. I said that the problem is that the world doesn't want the church, because the church looks and acts like the world. And if you think about what they're working with versus what we're working with, if we try to mimic and copy the world and use their strategies and their tactics, we're going to lose that battle. But if we follow what the Word of God says, I'm a big advocate of the words in red, the things that Jesus instructed us about loving people, transforming our cultures through love. Oh boy, we'd live in a much, much better world. And see, that's why I'm such a big advocate of standing up for the values of Christianity to once again come back to our country. Because, see, I believe that we were not blessed by coincidence. I believe that it was the divine hand of God and His plan to bless us and to keep us and to use us in a mighty way. And I believe with all of my heart that if we could find a way to get back to that place, back to that place where He is once again using us and ministering to us, and I just believe that we'd be better if we loved our neighbor as we loved ourselves. You think about how far that could go. But see, that's a Bible principle. We can't teach that. We're not allowed to talk about that. But yet, it just makes so much sense. You look at all the stuff that's happening around our country today, and if we could all learn to love each other as we love ourselves, we would live in a more peaceful society. But we can't see beyond color. We can't see beyond lifestyles. We can't see beyond anything. We can't see beyond race or religion. We just hate. And we have a world that's full of hate. And the Bible teaches, Jesus taught to love your neighbor as you love yourself. He said to love those who hurt you, love those who persecute you. But these are all, see, that's what I'm saying. These are all principles that we don't talk about and we're not allowed to talk about unless it's in the church. But these are good. These make us better. It's amazing to me that people that think that Christianity should be kicked to the curb, they take some of these principles and they get on social media and they say, if we could just learn to love one another. It's a biblical principle. And yes, we should. Is it okay to say that was the core values of what Jesus taught? But no, you can't say that anymore. You can't mention that Jesus taught us to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. You can't talk about that profound culture-shaking revelation that he gave, called the Beatitudes. You can't talk about that anymore. It's got to be done in the confines of your home or in the church house. Come on, people. It's a good message. It's a good message. It makes us better. It teaches us to be better. That's why it's always so mind-boggling to me that we don't want our children to hear about the Ten Commandments. What's so wrong with that? Teaches us not to be jealous. Teaches us not to want what someone else has. Teaches us not to murder or steal or lie. Oh, I bet it's the one where it says he'll have no other gods before him. That's probably that's where the catch is, right? It's a good message. And I would argue that those messages were the foundation of our country. I am not saying that our nation was ever perfect. We were never perfect, and that's the thing. Jesus himself taught that when we are weak, he is strong. But see, we are very weak right now. I don't know if you've been watching the news. I don't know if you're seeing what's happening around our country. But we are a very divided nation, and we are fractured. And I'm not sure, but it could be at any moment things go from bad to far worse. And the message of Jesus Christ was one that brought healing. Let me say it this way. Let me say it again. The message of Jesus Christ is one that will bring healing. But we've got to open up and say, here we are. You know, I have people that knew me before I met Jesus. And they'll brag on me and they'll say things like, wow, I'm proud of you. But listen, I know that the only thing good in me is Jesus. That's it. I don't think we have to beat anyone over the head. I'm not advocating running into our schools or any other public place and shouting, Jesus, Jesus. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is that by eliminating him from the classroom and from politics and from society as a whole, what we have done is eliminated the message that made us better. We have eliminated the message that made us better because we are trying to rid ourselves of him and his teachings so much that we are welcoming the other side. What's the other side? Well, think about it. It would be the opposite of loving your neighbor. It would be the opposite of loving your enemies. It would be the opposite of that. What I'm advocating is let's once again open our homes, open our hearts, open our lives, open our society in America once again to that which made us great in the first place. That's what I'm advocating. No, we don't have to run into our schools and shout this and shout that. No. But what's wrong with forgiving people? What's wrong with that message? Oh, we're allowed to talk about forgiveness as long as we don't talk about who taught us to forgive. See, the idea of forgiveness comes from the reality that we have been forgiven. But we can't talk about that. See, you'll never know true forgiveness until you've been forgiven. That's the thing. So I'm not advocating that we should, you know, make any public place like church. That's what church is for. What I'm saying is, what's wrong with the idea of treating people better and being able to say, I treat people this way because of a relationship I have with Jesus? You don't have to preach a sermon, but you shouldn't have to hide who you are. Listen, the guy that I am on Sunday is the guy that I am on Monday. I can't separate myself from the fact that I'm a Christian. But it seems like society wants me to do that. And it's all because of this effort that started with the 3% of our population. And it's grown now. We are, I believe it was Abraham Lincoln who said, if you want to see what the next generation will be like, look to the classroom. Because there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you something. We are raising generations that have no knowledge of Jesus Christ. None. No knowledge. No knowledge of that message. And see, remember just a few moments ago I was talking about crime and Christianity stops crime because crime comes from the heart and Christianity changes the heart? That's so true. Just the same as we are trying to teach things, principles that are founded in the Word of God, and we're trying to kick him out and hijack his message and teach it, but you cannot do it that way because you cannot teach what you don't understand. You cannot fully teach what you don't understand. If you don't understand forgiveness, you can tell people to forgive. But there's, you can't teach it. You can say, oh, you need to forgive, but it's something you don't understand. You haven't done it yourself because you haven't been forgiven. And the beauty of it is today, all you have to do is say yes to him. That's it. Just say yes. Just say yes, Lord. Okay. I don't know. I just think we'd be better. I know we would be better if we would just go back to that which made us good in the first place. Once again, rely and trust in him. I'm here today because of him. This is not the direction that I was going. If you would have told me in high school that this is what I'd be doing, I would have told you were a liar because I was going a different way. But he intervened in my life, and I said yes. And he has shaped everything about me. Anything, let me say it this way, anything good in me is because of him. And anything not so good in me, I'm trying to let him run it out, but it's a struggle. You know that, right? It's a struggle. Anyway, this three-part series has been titled, God Bless the USA. And as I sum it all up here, if we want God's blessings, we need to ask him once again to be a part of our everyday lives. There's hope, but it's in him. It's not going to happen through any politician or any presidential candidate or any president. It's not going to happen through them. The only way we will ever be great again is through Jesus Christ. Thanks for taking the time to listen. If you would like to listen to all of, if you missed the first two parts of this and you want to listen to all of them, go to blogtalkradio.com/ What's Important Now. blogtalkradio.com/ What's Important Now. Fight the good fight of faith. Contend for the faith. There is a cause. It does matter, ladies and gentlemen, and it is important now. I'm Tom Sears. God bless you. Tune back in next week for more What's Important Now. God bless.